Slovenia, cool as hell. He scores the ball and he rebounds well. Don't fight the future, the future is Luka. The timing sucks cause the Mavs are ass, but did you see his no-look pass? Whoa! Don't fight the future is Luka.
Hello, this is 77 Minutes, a Dallas Mavericks podcast, part of the Athletic Podcast Network, the only Mavericks podcast that is not currently actively watching the Thunder game at this exact moment. Because, you know, we got a podcast to record. I'm Tim Cato, I'm ready to talk about the Mavericks. We've got Josh Bowe from Mavs Moneyball, someone I've known for a decade plus. Did I hire you? Hire with the biggest quote around that word possible, because Mavs Moneyball is just a fun little enterprise, and it was back then. It honestly is more serious now, and I'll let you talk about that. But is that how that worked? Did I swing in like slightly before you?
No, I think you either we joined the same year or you joined the year before me. We were both working under Lisa, LJ.
That's right.
I think
that's
she both right. brought us on. Yeah. You were a senior in high school when I met you.
Oh boy.
And I know that sounds crazy, but I mean, I was like a freshman or sophomore in college, so it's not that big a deal. But
it's still
crazy to think about.
We've been through this journey together in some ways, in a covering, watching, thinking, you know, just trying to understand the Mavericks together. Like we have gone through it, and I will say that it's completely my fault. I've never had you on the podcast, but I do think like your tweets are just like, I don't need to tweet anymore. Just like, I just refer people to your feed, because we have a running joke. It's me, you, and Iztok that we can't read what the other people write, because it's too close. When we write, it ends up being like very suspiciously similar to what the others write. So if we just don't read it before, then it is our own thoughts, even if it's the same ones.
Yeah, exactly. We've got like a little bit of a hive mind going on, and hey, we were at the same website for like a long time. That's going to happen. Also, it's just funny because we're not rocket scientists. It's basketball. At a certain point, everyone's watching the same games. You know, it's only logical that we're going to eventually come to the same conclusions. But you're all right. It is funny how similar we seem to take in the game. That always gives me a chuckle whenever I wake up in the morning and, you know, if I wrote something, you see what it is and then compare it to yours, and it'd be like, yep, we're on target again. Looks good.
so the reason, the specific reason I was like, all right, we got to talk, is just how weird the season is, and all everything that has gone, you know, really, and again, this is using your words as much as mine. Everything has gone the opposite of what we expected. Real quick, before we get into the meat of this, tell me, as much as the listener, like, what is this new podcast thing that you guys have going on, you and Kirk Henderson at Mavs Moneyball, that it has shifted to a new platform because of, you know, various SB Nation stuff. But what are you guys doing, and where can it be found?
Yeah, so we are now Pod Maverick. That's our new name. We rebranded our podcast feed because we were part of the Vox. We were contract employees. They decided not to renew our podcast contract. They're keeping the site, so we're still writing for MavsMoneyball.com. We're both still editors over there, so that's not changing. And then our new podcast feed is Pod Maverick, and technically it's not even a new feed. They gave us our feed, so nothing's really changing, just the name and the branding. And then since we're doing that, we are moving to the Blue Wire Podcast Network, which if you're listening to this, you've probably listened to the Light Years podcast, that very popular Warriors podcast. They're in the Blue Wire Network. Those guys, Sam and Andy, kind of answered some questions before us, and we felt like that was the best fit. And now we have a YouTube channel. We're doing video. All our podcasts are video podcasts now, in addition to audio. So you can find Pod Maverick on YouTube. And yeah, we're trying some new things. But we're also, you know, nothing is changing too much, at least in terms of like just going to your podcast feed and listening. That's staying about the same. We just had to do some work behind the scenes because typical, you know, it's not easy being in a Vox contractor in 2023. So you have to be
independent part-time media is I mean, any media at this point, any journalism, but independent part-time media is a grind, and I respect everybody who does it. And I listen to almost just about every episode that you guys do after every single game. After writing my own piece, but I listen to just about everyone. I appreciate y'all's perspective. I highly recommend anybody on this feed who does not listen to now Pod Maverick to go listen to that. This season has been weird. There are two games left, and as I said in the intro, I am not actively watching the Thunder game. It's on behind me, my desk, my podcasting studio, which is just a desk in the corner of my apartment. It does not face the TV. The TV behind me does have the Thunder game on. They're up, and if the Thunder went out, that's it, right? But if they drop one of the next two and they play Memphis, and Memphis might have something to play for, they might not. It depends on the Kings' result. It's just a lot of swirling things all at once that, honestly, like, I became a journalist because I didn't want to do math, and then unfortunately I had to do a lot of math. It turns out that statistics are actually a very important part of covering basketball. I was not told this, and so that's another reason why you should not go to journalism school. But all that math aside, there is a chance the Mavericks make it into the play-in tournament. There is a chance they doesn't. They do not. It's really hard to say whether they should or not, but this season is weird. I think that you and I both just have this deep, deep, like, just suspicion, this feeling, this like, something internal is saying, this team is going to make the play-in tournament. I feel that way. I think you have said that you feel this way. And it's just, I think it's everything that has come before this that is leading us to just believe that even though this team has looked done and out, I titled an episode that went onto our feed that said the season is over, more or less. And yet here we are. With a chance that it is not over, come Sunday, the final game, there is a small chance, a big chance, a something chance that they still make it. And I don't know what to think of that. I cannot understand this team. And I know you can't either, but I think between the two of us over the next 10 minutes, can we try?
Like, yeah, we could try.
give me your best shot at how weird this team is, how you've come to understand them.
Yeah, it's just so maddening because, you know, just the record alone is bad, 38-42. I wrote a column about how, you know, teams that have 24-year-old megastars at this point, you know, or have a megastar at this point in their career, almost all of those teams historically are not only in the playoffs, but they are competing for championships. Almost none of them missed the playoffs, and almost none of them were, you know, four games under 500 with two to go. So this is unprecedented. Like, we've never, like, Luka was legitimate MVP candidate when the season started. I think he might have been the front runner after like the first month or two. You know, he was just
The reason he isn't
terror.
Is the record.
Yeah,
it's the lack of wins.
Yeah, and it's just this just doesn't happen unless like the star player gets hurt or there's major injuries, and you know Luka's going to play in 60 plus games. He's going to meet the new NBA games played. Marker, you know, I think the 65 games. I don't remember where he's at, but I'm pretty sure he's
doesn't apply this year, but just generally, yes.
Yeah. So he's 60 plus. So, like, you can't blame it on that. So it's just bizarre. And he's had a great season. It's not like he's slumped. You know, I know there's been a lot of consternation around his defense, and rightfully so, and his focus and his maturity. But at the end of the day, he's still having like an incredible season and better in some ways in some of the past couple of seasons for him. So, it's bizarre, and every single loss is close. They don't get blown out. They've been blown out twice. They've lost by double digits twice since January 1st, only once with Luka, and that was against Boston on the road, which is like the most understandable blowout loss you can imagine. Like, they're one of the best teams in the league. And it's just crazy. You just look at the schedule, and you're like, wow, if they just made like two more threes or if they just got like two more stops, they would have won that game. And you can do that for like 20 of the last losses they've had. It's just – it's absurd. So one part of your brain is like, well, look at the record, look at the losses. They're not a great team. You know, look at the defensive rating, look at all this. And the other hand, you just look and you're like, yeah, but they're only losing these games by like 5 points. And in the NBA, especially right now, like 5 points is nothing. That's two shots and you have the lead. And it's just bananas. And, you know, that Kings game on Wednesday was a great example of just like the yin and yang of the season. They get their doors blown off in the first half, and you're like, all right, here we go again. And then, you know, you have two of the best offensive talents in the league, and Kyrie goes crazy, and it's just like, wow, like it, you want to think like
hitting
all 23s
in a game is a very cool party trick, and they've done that like 5 times this season, like since the Kyrie trade.
Yeah, 5 times since the Kyrie trade. They only did it 3 times all last year. Like, this is one of the greatest offenses I've ever seen, and it's kind of being wasted with this season. And that's why it's just so bizarre. Like, you know, the vibes would be so much different if, you know, they lost before the Kings game, they lost 7 out of their last 8. If like 4 of those losses were like they lost by 15 to 20 points, like everyone would be like, okay, like, you know, it makes sense. They've given up, but like they're trying. Like, aside from the 2 first halves and those Charlotte games, they're about as competitive as they can be. It's less of a give up, and I think it's just more of how limited the team is, which drives you crazy. It just makes you think about the possibilities and what would have happened if they just made some more subtle roster tweaks, because it's like, good Lord, the offense is incredible. Like, they can't do any more offensively, and you just want to imagine, it's like, well, what if they had like the 18th defense instead of the 23rd or 25th or whatever it is right now, you know? And it just makes your mind race about all the possibilities, because every game is so close. Like, it would be so much easier to forget about this team and not think about them too hard if they were just getting absolutely destroyed in these losses, but they're not. You know, they're close losses, they're overtime losses, they're clutch losses. It's just, it's maddening. And that's what I think, maybe that's part of what's driving you crazy, but that's part of what's driving me crazy. It's like, you can't, for a team that has a record as bad as it is and might finish 11th in the West, we still can't really turn our brains off. One, because it's, you know, it's your full-time job, it's my part-time job. And two, it's because, like, it's not over. Like, they're very capable of winning these next 2 games, and we'll go from there. It's just crazy. I've never seen a team like this that's so back and forth, Jekyll and Hyde. It's been pretty remarkable to watch.
And I think those Charlotte games were big in the understanding, or at least the way we started talking about the team. I've said on this podcast, I've written it in so many places. I kept saying after the Kyrie trade that I thought this team was going to figure it out, that they were going to put it together, that at some point they were going to put together a stretch that made them look competent, that got them into the playoffs, that erased all of these doubts. And then we got to Charlotte, and for 2 games, they just stopped trying. Like it's the only 2 games of the season where I can say this team did, like, something happened. You know, maybe they were just, you know, so preoccupied with Mark Cuban's challenge, you know, protest of the Warriors loss, that, you know, they couldn't even focus on an opponent like Charlotte. But like, those are the only 2 games that stand out in those ways, because mm-hmm. after that they tried again. Before that they had tried again. You know, they had been trying. They had been losing close games, but they had been trying. The effort was there. You know, this offense can go win them any game they want against any team. It's not, you know, hitting 20 plus threes is not something they can do, you know, 4 times in a 7-game series against any team. But absolutely, I don't care what team it is. If they were matched up with them in a 7-round series, they're probably winning a game or two because of how good this offense is and what it can do. And I think the Charlotte game really impacted the way I thought about this team. And that's when I started saying, all right, it's done. It's probably over. And, you know, I still think to some degree it's over. Like, they can make the play-in tournament. As much as, you know, that deep-seated feeling of they're going to do exactly what we don't think they're going to do. I don't really think they're going to win 2 road games against teams about on their level and make it into, you know, against the Nuggets. But, I mean, who fucking knows? I don't know. I've stopped trying to, like, fully internalize.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to michelobultra.com /courtside to learn more.
One thing I wanted to mention is one thing that has made this season weird is just some of the results have been preposterous. And I think the first thing that comes to mind is the losses, you know, losing to the Thunder when you have a, I think it was a 16-point lead with 4 minutes to go. You know, several losses are just like really hard to comprehend. Not in a Charlotte way because it was effort, but in a how was this lead, how was this comfortable game all of a sudden turned on its head. But on the flip side, there have been games that they should not have won. To explain this, the Mavericks embrace variance by shooting this many three-pointers. And I do think that a 28-point lead being blown is going to be something that they did. That was against the Lakers that they blew that, right?
Right.
Yeah. I think that is something that's going to become a little bit more common just as three-point shooting becomes as prolific as it has been over the past few years and continues to be, that, you know, leads are just not what they used to be, but we're still operating because we've watched the NBA for, you know, a decade or two, and we have an understanding of what leads should be safe and what shouldn't. I mean, a 28-point lead should be safe no matter what, but that's going to happen more often. In fact, like the Mavericks blew that 28-point lead, and then all of a sudden, like 4 days later, a 29-point lead was blown in the NBA. I think that's a little bit of the weirdness that's coming from. It's just the Mavericks embracing variance by their three-point shooting, and said variance thus impacting the way results happen in this league, in this sport.
Yeah, and it's just, I mean, I feel like there's been a lot said about, like, you know, the make or miss aspect of this league, and it can be frustrating to boil down, you know, a win or loss to that, because we want to try to, you know, we love this game. We want to talk about it. We want to get into the nuts and bolts. And when the answer to, like, hey, why did this happen? Oh, well, this team missed all their threes. It didn't matter about the look quality. They just didn't have a good shooting night. It's like, oh, that's it. And it takes a little bit away of what we want to talk about, I think. And that's kind of a struggle. It's, at least it's been a struggle for me. You know, it's like when I look at some of these results the Mavs have had, I'm like, there's got to be something more to it. It's like, nope, they just missed their threes, or nope, they just made their threes. Like, and that's, you know, that's really it. Like, the Sacramento game, I think they made eight more, you know, I think Sacramento made 12 and the Mavericks made 20. That's eight more threes.
There's a tweet that went around that if a team makes more threes than their opponent, they win like 2/3 of the time.
Oh yeah. Like, totally believe that. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's not more, you know, like, you can add all the variables you want. This had no variables added. It just looked at, did you make more threes? You usually win. Like, yeah. Go ahead.
And then you double. And I was just going to say, then you amplify it with this Mavericks team, because that's all they do. Like, outside of Kyrie and outside of Luka, they don't put pressure on the rim at all from any other player on the roster. So, you know, they're not very high in rim attempts. They're not very high in paint attempts, and that's with Luka and that's with Kyrie. So if they are not making their threes, it's not like they can be like, okay, we're going to pivot to do this. We're, you know, they can get to the free throw line. I think that's about it. But otherwise, it's not like, okay, we're gonna attack the paint. Our three's not falling. It's like, well, no, they have to keep shooting threes. Like, Tim Hardaway Jr. and Reggie Bullock and Maxi Kleba and Josh Green and all these guys, all these role players, they have to shoot threes because that's their skill set. So I think that just amplifies it even more. Yeah.
Yeah. And if they aren't hitting them, the defense has obviously been the issue all season. And you know, there's just the idea that they leak points, that they do not have rim protection, that they allow. They're okay sometimes at limiting the number of rim attempts, but they just concede everything once players get there. And recently, over the past few months, really since the Kyrie trade, they've, you know, it's been 60 plus points in the paint, you know, 50 plus, 60 plus, 50 plus. And let me give like a couple reasons of what I see as what has affected the defense this season. And I'm curious, like, big picture, just like what has affected it. I do think that, you know, in a small way. So we know Dorian Finney-Smith leaving, that's a problem. And it's not just a problem because he's a good defender, but I think that a modern NBA defense is based around tall wings. They have none of those. The Mavericks do not have Maxi Kleba in some ways, but I don't know if he's quite the same player since coming back from hamstring surgery. He's 31 now. You know, certainly is not a defense of himself. And, you know, so that has been a factor. I think in some ways the team misses Jalen Brunson. And it's not that I don't know if Jalen Brunson or Kyrie Irving, I have no clue which is a better defender. Neither of them are plus defenders. Both of them are below average. They're small enough that they do not consistently, you know, players just shoot over them. They do not consistently impact. But if the Mavericks, and the Mavericks do run a very rotation-based scheme, Sean Sweeney believes a lot in, you know, X-ing, you know, rotations where one player basically cuts up and runs to the nearer wing shooter and the other one goes, you know, the guy rotating after a double goes all the way to the corner. You know, it's very rotation heavy. And one thing I'll say about last season's team, when they were a good defensive team, when they had an identity that almost felt like a little bit of smoke and mirrors at times, but it kept working, and it kept working long enough that I really became a believer in it. But the one thing I can say about it is that everybody they played, outside of maybe Spencer Dinwiddie, was exceptionally good at making the right rotations when they needed to make the rotations. I don't think the players they have played this season are good rotation players, like good at rotating when they need to. Not, they're not as good as a lot of the players they played last year. I think that is one place when I'm trying to understand why is this defense worse. It's that the style they play does not match the style of what the defenders on this team can do, even if a lot of these defenders are very limited, not exceptionally good players. And I'm running out of options. Like, I'm running out of explanations. And so this is me reaching a little bit to say, oh, the team misses Jalen Brunson on defense. Yes, I understand what that sounds like. But I have talked to people who work for the Mavericks, like in the front office, who ask me, what is happening to the defense? Like, do you have any answers? Because I can't quite understand it. You know, like it is something about this team this season to go from this really impressive unit to what they are now that is almost beyond belief. And so I'm curious, first off, if you think this theory that I have is it holds any merit. And then where would you go when you're trying to understand, like, what is wrong, what has changed this season from last season?
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with any of that in terms of, you know, the roster and how it fits the scheme and how it's been a little downgraded there. You don't have Dorian, you don't have Jalen, you've got guys playing more minutes like Christian Wood, and then at the start of the season, JaVale McGee, guys that, you know, you have trouble fitting, you know, staying on target and staying on assignment. I think
their
also
defensive uptick last year sort of coincided with Tim Hardaway Jr.'s injury. I'll add that, you know, as well.
Yeah, also that, you know, Tim is one of those great effort guys, but it's just sometimes he just gets a little lost off the ball. I think, you know, it's definitely partly that what you were talking about. I think part of it is also because the defense was bad before Dorian was traded. I mean, they were still in the low 30s defensive rating wise before that Kyrie trade. So it's not like they were on point and then the Kyrie trade happened and they slumped. They've slumped since the Kyrie trade for sure, but they slumped from a place that was already not great. And some of it is just some physical regression, I think. Like, their three most badass defenders last year in the playoffs were Dorian, Reggie, and Maxey. And those Dorian and Reggie almost averaged 40 minutes per game in the playoffs. That's 18 games. They basically played 40 minutes a game, all high leverage, high stress, you know, possessions, you know, not taking any plays off really. You know, they couldn't because they were really the only two defensive wings on the roster, depending on how you want to classify Maxey. And I honestly feel like, you know, Dorian's 29, almost 30. Reggie is, I think 31.
Yeah. 30
or
32.
Yeah.
Oh, 32, just, yeah.
Father time. Like, I think those guys got worn out after that playoff run. Like, they made a deep run, and, you know, they played until, you know, May, and the season starts up like 6 months later, and it's like, wow, they put a ton of wear and tear on their tires. I'll just say that. And I think the seasons before the Kyrie trade, like, those guys just looked like they had lost a step, especially Reggie. He just cannot stay in front of his guy, and that's like, if you can't do that, everything else breaks. Like, it doesn't matter how good your rotations are. It doesn't matter how good your rim defense is. If you just can't stop dribble drive, point of attack, line drive attacks that don't even involve really any action, then you're compromised. You know, everyone has to try to to help, and you're forcing rotations, and you're going to give up either shots at the rim or shots beyond the arc because you've kind of lost control of the defensive possession, which I think is what they did really good last year. They were so assertive without being over aggressive. You know, they weren't doing the crazy trapping scheme that Kidd did in Milwaukee that kind of got wore out its welcome because teams were able to counter it after they had enough film. But, you know, they kind of dictated the terms defensively. You know, they didn't play pure drop, but they also didn't play, you know, pure trap. They kind of did mixed it up. It was kind of like in the middle. It felt like they hit a sweet spot, and they did it because I think they had the horses, and I don't think they have the horses this year. And I think it's led to the scheme feeling a little more conservative than it used to be, because I don't think they, you know, Maxey doesn't look like Maxey from last year. And understandable, he tore his hamstring. Like, he had a pretty bad injury that can hurt your athleticism. And then Reggie just doesn't look the same, and Dorian didn't look the same. And I think it's because of those minutes. And then you compound that with the fact that none of their roster additions in the summer have helped the defense. You know, it was Wood and McGee were the two main additions. None of those guys are big wings, and none of them have been fantastic at protecting the rim. So, you know, they're
not players that rotate. You know, they're not going to be in the right places at all times. They might be in the right places to block some shots sometimes, but they're not going to be in the right places at all times if you have a scheme that's based about always being in the right place.
Yeah, and I think they stretched, I think, the roster last year to its defensive peak. Like, I think they milked it for all it's worth. I think that's the most they could have gotten out of it. And instead of doubling down on that and being like, okay, well, let's make sure Reggie and Dorian aren't playing 40 minutes a night in the playoffs again, let's go get some wings. You know, they got two bigs and they lost a guard. So, you know, I have some qualms. We all have some, you know, I definitely have some noted qualms with that, but we don't have to necessarily hash into stuff that's a year old about offseason stuff that'll drive me crazy. But I just think we don't have time for that. Yeah, they just need to get more athletic on the perimeter, pure and simple. Like, they need some like 6'7", 6'8", 6'9" guys that can guard and aren't 30 years old and have some pep in their step.
Yeah, I have one point about this. But first, we have to acknowledge like the very other obvious reason why the Mavericks are worse defensively. And Josh, I mean, we clearly haven't acknowledged that the NBA introduced the take foul this season. And
you're right,
so,
it changed the
you
game.
Know, as Mark Cuban said before the game on Wednesday, you know, the take foul, you know, it's just, you know, you can't overcome something like that. It's out of the team's control. You know, what were they supposed to do? A take foul, you know, something that I've seen called, how many times do you think a take foul has been called in all of the Mavericks games that you've watched? Maybe, has it hit double digits?
I bet you it's around there. It's definitely less than one per game on average, for sure. So, like,
it does not. Yeah. It's a very small number. Anyway, that's what Mark said. I went around and asked some people just to make sure that there wasn't something that I was missing. You know, like when he said it, I followed up. Like, he said it like two or three times, and I finally was like, Mark, what is the take foul? Like, why are you using this as a reason for your defense being bad? And he said some more stuff about it, and it was not convincing. And it's not the reason, you know, it might have sped up the team a little bit. You know, I think one thing he said that I would be curious at looking, I haven't dug into the numbers. He said the team plays worse against athletic teams. And he said that's because of the take foul. I don't think it's because of the take foul, but I do think this team does not have athleticism, and there may be some correspondence there. But what I actually want to end on is Josh Green. And I'm really glad Josh Green is playing better. I still am absolutely a believer in him being a very good role player in the NBA. But I don't know. You know, I think he has a reputation. He has a Mavs fan reputation as a, you know, like a really good defender, or he's supposed to be. And because they see the athleticism. And I think that when he was playing like he was before the Kyrie trade, if that had continued, if he had been able to kind of slide into that, I don't think what has happened since the Kyrie trade would have happened, which I don't blame Josh Green for. But I do think that there was a lot put on him when Dorian Finney-Smith was traded. And I don't think Josh Green, whether it's his size or whether it's just his inexperience, I think he's a fine defender. Like, fine. Capital F, fine. He's okay. He's solid. On that end, he can do some really highlight stuff, but I don't think that he is anywhere near all NBA defensive status. And him being vaulted into that role, especially as like a 6'4 player, he's not a tall wing. You know, we talk about tall wings being this important. He is not one of those players. And, you know, it's a little bit weird to, I'm bringing him up just to explain the defense, not to criticize him, a 22-year-old who is, you know, 2 years ago, you know, looked like he might be out of the league at this point. And he has turned into somebody who I am absolutely a believer in. But I also do not think that he can be lumped into, oh, well, they just need more elite defenders like Josh Green. He is not that sort of player right now, and he shouldn't be relied as such. But unfortunately, the team has a no choice but to do that this season.
Yeah, and this is like his first real season too. So it's hard to want to put a label on him right now when it's like, man, he didn't play his first 2 years. Like, he basically, right. You know, this is his real first real season.
He had like a 40-game stretch his second year.
Yeah.
And that was it.
Yeah, that was it. And it's not like he was playing huge minutes in that 40-game stretch. So, yeah, you're right. He's deceptively short. Like, I think he's listed at 6'7", which is outrageous. I don't know how that
is
happened.
Is he really?
ESPN has him listed at 6'7", but he is not 6'7". I don't know what
I've always associated him with, like, 6'4". I will say, yeah, he's not that much bigger than me, and I'm a fake 6 foot. I'm like 5'11 and a half. He's not. Yeah.
Yeah. Because Hardaway is like 6'4", 6'5", and he's about his height. So yes. So he's not 6'7". But, you know, he's like the only young athletic guy on the roster. So it makes it really easy for the fan base to just kind of like prop him up and hold him up and be like, just want more because you're like, it's like you're dying of thirst in the desert and Josh Green is the oasis. So not to say that he is deceptive in terms of like how impactful he can be. Like, he has had a really, really, really great third season, better than I think I could have ever imagined. And you just hope he can build on it. And honestly, maybe you can slot him into, since he isn't a big wing, maybe he can be your point of attack defender going forward, because Lord knows they don't have that on the roster right now. And then maybe you can get some bigger wings and an actual honest to God defensive big behind him, and then you won't have to put so much pressure on him. I feel like sometimes watching him, I feel that pressure that he needs to be this all world defensive player. I actually felt like in some of the games after the Kyrie trade, he was like over defending. Like, he was so eager to play defense that he was like over helping and over rotating and leaving guys open, not because he was aloof off the ball, but because he was like a little too on point. Like, he was helping when maybe he shouldn't have maybe stayed home, because he's like, he's trying to do everything. And, you know, that comes with time and experience, and you know, he should be better at that as his career goes on. But hopefully, you know, you're right. Like, he's not the big defensive wing stopper this team needs. So they need to make roster adjustments so that he can kind of fit into his own defensive role. And kind of like how Reggie and Dorian played last year. I mean, Dorian was the guy who guarded the big wings, and Reggie was the guy who guarded the guards or the point of attack initiators of the other team's offense. And maybe Green can follow in Bullock's steps, and now they got to find the Dorian replacement.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's spot on. All right, last question.
Okay.
The Oklahoma City Thunder are up by 2. Just 2. It was a double-digit game a little bit ago. It is now a 2-point game. On Sunday night, will I be booking a flight to Minnesota? They make it to the play-in.
I was gonna be cheeky and be like, no, because you're gonna be booking a flight to New Orleans. But
I would prefer that. If you give me an option of the two, give me New Orleans. Yeah, look, that would at least be worth it.
If you have the heat covering this team, the least the Mavericks can do is send you to New Orleans. I don't know. I mean, mathematically, no, but in my heart, I think they're gonna make the play-in. The thing is they're going to win these next 2 games. I think even if they don't want to win them, like the Bulls are going to be resting. Their injury reports already come out, and all their, you know, Zach LaVine and DeMar DeRozan and Vucevic are all questionable with rest. Like, they're locked into 10. They have no reason to play. And I think Billy Donovan said, like, we don't want them to be rusty, so we'll probably play them in the last game, and maybe we'll rest them in the Dallas game. So I think, I mean, even if they do play, they're not going to be engaged. They're going to be going through the motions. Mavs are at home. You know, then they play the Spurs. Like, I feel like they could, you know, even with all the stipulations we said about how weird this season is and how all these teams have been losing to all these other teams when they shouldn't have been losing to them. You know, the Mavericks losing to the Hornets. The Thunder have lost to the Pacers and the Hornets recently. The Timberwolves lost to the Trailblazers last week. Like, I fully understand that, but I just, I just feel like a team with so much on the line, that's obviously not going to give up. I feel like they're going to go 2-0. And so I just feel like the Thunder are going to drop one game. Yeah. And I just feel like the Thunder are going to maybe drop one, and that's it. That's all it takes. From where they go there, I don't know, but I think they're going to backdoor right into the 10th seed.
We will see. We will see. This game is ongoing. Obviously, probably listener, when you listen to it, you will know the result of that, and you will know whether there is whether the Thunder have dropped that game or whether there's going to be one to go. But we're going to find out. Josh, thanks for hopping on. I appreciate it. We did not solve the Mavericks. We still do not understand them, but we did our best effort, and that is all we can do.
I really appreciate having me on. It's been great. I've loved what you've been doing with Austin and Mike and Dave when he's on. You guys are doing great. I've loved your work on The Athletic this year, of course. So keep it up. Don't let this team get you two down. And hopefully we can get you to, if we're going to get you still covering this team in mid-April, then hopefully we get to send you. So that's my hope.
Fingers crossed, man. On that note, we're going to be out of here. Listeners, thank you for listening. It's what you do best. We'll see ya.
He plays Fortnite just like me. I am 34. Don't fight the future, honey. Don't fight the future. The future is Luka, Big Dick Doncic from the home of Melania Trump. How many kids you have? Don't fight the future, it tears me apart. Don't fight the future, please be nice to Luka. Future four-time MVP.
And so we take the analytics and look at everything you guys write.